What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to our little podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is Sean O'Connell. What is up, Sean?
We are wrapping up the summer season, Eric. It's finally time to put this big beast to bed. It feels like we prepare for it all year. We look forward to these blockbusters. We experience these blockbusters. We critique them, talk about them with you guys here on the podcast. And now we're transitioning into the more serious, potentially Oscar-friendly, awards-friendly season. But before we do that, we have to say goodbye to the splashy special effects and the overblown acting and the franchises and the superheroes and the sequels and all the things that come with the delightful summer season.
Whenever we say goodbye to a movie season, I always picture what's his name on the Leonardo DiCaprio's friend in the Titanic.
Yes,
when a Titanic is pulling away, and he's waving goodbye. I'll never forget you.
And yet, I'm going to forget most of these movies.
They're all forgettable. No,
Yes. There
is some good stuff. So, what we're going to do? Let's break it down here, Sean. We're going to go down. I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories.
Okay.
Sort of our personal awards.
Okay.
For the summer movie season. We'll go through them pretty fast. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on each one. But just so you kind of get a little bit of a flavor, a little bit of what we liked the most, what we maybe didn't like, you know, the most or least or whatever, disappointments, biggest summer story. There's a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. So let's start off. What do you want to start off with? You want to start off with the positive. Let's start off with the positive.
Yes, let's start good.
Favorite summer movie. What was yours?
All right. Here's where I have to ask you. I have to clarify. Can we go small? Can we say like an art house indie, or are we really limiting it to like franchise, splashy blockbuster summer movies?
Yeah. See, that's a hard thing to do when you come to the summer movie season, because, you know, when you pick out the great films, you have to say to yourself, well, you know, can I go with the smaller films, even because they still opened up, because I know the summer is all about the big films.
Right.
Considering that the two films that tied for my favorite are smaller films.
Okay, you're going to go small.
I am going to go small.
All right, I'm going to go big then. I'll surprise you.
All right, so you know what? Sean's going to go big. I'm going to go small. Your favorite movie of the summer season is?
The Great Gatsby.
Ooh.
The Great Gatsby might challenge to make my top 10.
Really?
Not. By the time I get to the year's end, and I'm going to want to see it again, and I'm going to want to see where it falls. But this is one movie that I just didn't expect to like as much as I did. And it delivered on a lot of the places where summer movies should. It was visually spectacular, which we expect from Baz Luhrmann. It had large performances from people like Tobey Maguire, Leonardo DiCaprio. But it resonated with me. It really stuck with me. There was a love story in the middle of this film that I didn't expect to connect with as deeply as I did. And I attribute it to the performances of Carey Mulligan and DiCaprio. I thought they had great chemistry. I thought it was one of DiCaprio's better performances in the past few years. It was subtle, but very, very powerful. And amidst all the bombast of the summer, I found in this very bright, very colorful, and very appealing film a small, tiny, emotional love story to plug into. And I just loved the way that Luhrmann told this story. Gatsby is one of my favorite movies of the year so far, and definitely one of my favorite movies of the summer.
You know what? I'm almost agreeing with you. I really loved Gatsby, too. I felt it was a little bit long, but yeah. I really loved the musical selections. I loved the way he played with different musical genres in it, how he mixed the hip-hop and the jazz. Mm-hmm. I think Lana Del Rey, I'm still not sure whether or not that's an original song for a movie. If it is, I cannot see it losing the Oscar for Best Song. That
right.
song really pulls you into the emotional weight of the film, and there's a lot of that weight. And so you know what? You're totally not wrong in picking that because I really enjoyed it too.
Okay, so your two choices, you go a little bit smaller. What did you like?
My two choices, I went smaller, and I'm sorry for picking two. But I chose The Spectacular Now.
Oh, I love that movie.
And Blue Jasmine.
Which, oh, nice.
I'm very high on both of those films, specifically The Spectacular Now. I really love the performances from Shailene Woodley and Miles Teller. Both of them blew me away. And what I liked about this film is, yes, it's a coming-of-age dramedy. And, you know, about kids that are sort of finding themselves as they, you know, get older in high school and start moving on to graduating in college. Yes, that's all there. Yes, that's familiar. But you know what? They kind of, by tackling teenage alcoholism, mm-hmm. I feel like that's something I haven't seen in a coming-of-age movie, or at least a memorable coming-of-age movie. And I really loved the way they tackled it. And I loved the way Miles Teller sort of became this character of this fun-loving guy that has this drinking problem. And it's not – they don't hit you over the head. This isn't like an HBO special. You know, you remember those old HBO special stories. You know, Johnny has – is addicted to alcohol, you know. It's not something like that. And the way they kind of connect it to that realization of figuring out that a lot of the stuff that your parents did, you're doing too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important time for a kid when all of a sudden you realize that, oh my God, I'm my parents.
Right.
And these are people that you spend a large majority of time staying away from when you're a kid. Right. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, I can't get away from them because I am them. As Sean's phone goes off in the background. That's how we roll here. But you know what? That's what I really loved about it. I really liked how they kind of approached and tackled that subject. On the Blue Jasmine side, the performances, again, blew me away. Kate Blanchett is just superb in this film. It's one of my favorite Woody Allen characters that I've seen. Definitely up there on my favorite female Woody Allen characters. I don't think he's written a female quite as strong as Kate Blanchett's character. I mean, we're going way back. And I really like both of those films. Both of them moved me. Both of them just kind of changed me. I enjoyed watching them from start to finish, and those are my picks.
Well, I love both of them too. And the thing about both of them is we're going to be talking about these movies for years to come, especially Spectacular Now. It's one of those films that it's not like an American Pie where they're going to be trying to crank sequels out of it. It's just a standalone piece of perfection that I think as more people find it, word of mouth is going to power it. It's going to be one of those movies that just it's on our shelf. It's going to stay there forever. We're always going to want to pull it off, revisit it. It's so good.
I agree. Let's move on to our least favorite movie of the summer season. And if we do hear a little bit of noise in the background, I'm blaming Sean because he is sitting outside. But you know what? It's flavor. It's Southern flavor. He's sitting outside on his back porch in North Carolina. It's a humid day. There are crickets in the background. Think rocking chairs.
Sweet tea.
And that's sort of the mood that Sean is – that's the place that he's in right now. So I want you to enjoy that background noise and let yourself roll back into a hot, humid Southern day.
It's part of the motif. We're saying goodbye to summer. I'm bringing summer to the podcast. I also have my dog is at my feet, and I'm paranoid he's going to start barking at any minute. So you're going to hear him soon too.
Look at this. We have a Norman Rockwell painting happening on Sean's back porch as we speak. Your least favorite movie of summer, Sean O'Connell.
Man of Steel. I did not care for Zack Snyder's version of Superman. And it went wrong for me almost from the first few minutes and never really regained any kind of footing for me. And I really wanted to like this. All of the trailers had me geeked out for it. I was dying for a Superman movie that I could embrace. And I was looking for the Dark Knight version of Superman, the Batman Begins version of Superman. And I thought Snyder would be the right guy, but it just – all of the decisions that he was making throughout the film just kept striking me the wrong way. And I kept wanting to stop the movie and ask questions like, wait a second, why is Russell Crowe back in this film as a hologram? And where did this suit come from? And how come Clark is all of a sudden working for this expedition that's in the north? And why are they destroying all of Metropolis? And this movie has been critiqued by a lot of different people, and it's getting picked apart for a lot of different reasons. But there's a very passionate fan base that thinks that Snyder made the right decision. And they're looking forward to seeing what he does with Batman and Superman. And I'm not saying that I'm not looking forward to that film too, but Man of Steel, and it might have to do with my expectations for it, really let me down. And it's a movie that I thought that I'd be going back to see multiple times. I like Superman a lot as a character. I thought Snyder and his special effects team could do a lot of really interesting things with them. And most of the things that they tried to do, that they chose to do, rubbed me the wrong way. And it was my biggest disappointment from the summer season. It's a movie that halfway through it, I couldn't wait for it to end. And I haven't gone back to see it again. And I have no interest in going back to see it.
I probably liked it a little bit more than you did. I agree that in the middle, it has some story problems. It has some pacing problems. It kind of rushes through some parts of Clark's life that maybe we need a little bit more explanation for. And it kind of rushes plot points and sticks Lois Lane in spots where it doesn't really make sense that she's there or why she's there or stuff like that. But you know what? I mean, I go back to even the Christopher Reeve movies. One of my biggest pet peeves of Superman 2 is when when Superman loses his powers and he's in this a chamber of isolation, and then all of a sudden him and Lois find themselves at a diner because they walk there, would they hitchhike there? You know what? A lot of these comic book movies, they have these loose ends, these plot points that exactly connect the dots. I give credit to Zack Snyder because I do like how they I do like the chances they took. I like the risks that they take. I liked how they left you with a Superman who, you know what, maybe you don't like him so much because you don't trust him so much. And you know what, I think that is an important place to take a character like Superman, who is this perfect being, who is this godlike being, who is this Jesus Christ like savior to our planet. I think, you know what, kind of, you know, taking him down a few notches and punching some holes in his personality and who he is, I think it's an important thing to do to establish a franchise and an arc for this character. So I like those choices. Do I feel like they succeeded 100%? No, but I do give the film credit for that, and I did like it because of that.
All right. Which movie let you down the most?
Lone Ranger. Lone Ranger let me down the most. You know what? I mean, I guess you can kind of go in and say – I didn't expect this movie to be good from the get-go, but you know what? I like Jerry Bruckheimer. I like when he kind of goes big. I just didn't think it was successful at all. There were times when I was watching trailers for this movie, and I was like, you know what? Maybe they pulled off some cool stuff. Maybe I like it. I like westerns. I'm a big fan of westerns. I don't think the summer movie going audience wants to see any more westerns. I just don't think it's a good genre to stick in the middle of summer. I also think it's not a good genre to play around with fantasy elements as cowboys and aliens. So I think that's where it got into trouble. But I still think they just made a lot of wrong decisions with this film, and it was just long and bloated, and
it felt like too many chefs. You know, everybody was giving their input. Oh, you should do this. Now you should try this. Hey, maybe we should go this way instead. And the movie never really figured out, you know, that there's a good 90-minute movie in there, I'm sure. But at 2 hours and 20 minutes or whatever it was, you're right. Bloated is the right word for it.
Yeah, and this is a problem that I hope I don't see in future summers. I feel like this summer was the summer of movies for everyone, for blockbusters for everyone. You know, we have to hit those four quadrants in order if we're going to make $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And we're getting these movies that are just safe and for everyone and don't really feel like they have someone – like when I look at Christopher Nolan's three Batman movies, I say this is a man that had a vision and executed them and said, get out of my way. And they're kind of – and they're ruthless in that way in a lot of ways. And so that's what I respect so much about that franchise. I feel like we need to see more of that in the summer movie season. Even Star Trek Into Darkness, which is going to be my disappointment of the summer. I feel like, you know, J.J. Abrams is close to being that kind of guy that says, get out of my way. This is how we're doing it. But that film didn't feel like it either. So let's move on to our biggest surprise, because from positive to negative to positive, your biggest surprise of the summer.
I'm going to go World War Z, which is a movie that, again, much like The Lone Ranger, came with all of this prepackaged hype or news story written around it already, where all you had to do was really fill in the blanks. But we were told through no uncertain terms that this was going to be a disaster, you know, that it was set up to fail. It had a third act that had to be completely reshot, and new screenwriters had to be brought in, and Brad Pitt and his director aren't getting along, and all of this money is being spent on this film that's all they didn't just put it out and watch it fall on its face, right? But it didn't. It ended up making a ton of money, and it ended up being, in my opinion, very enjoyable. And going back and rereading what the ending of the movie was supposed to be, it was supposed to be a Brad Pitt versus digital zombies in Moscow, an epic, massive battle. And instead, they went small. They scaled it back, and they came up with – spoilers. I'm very sorry if you haven't seen World War Z yet, but I'll try and avoid details. But a much smaller mission for this one man to complete, and they ratcheted up the suspense, and they ratcheted up up the tension. And I thought that that was the right move to make at that point of the story, because you're coming out of this bombastic sort of escape from Israel on a jet plane, and then the jet gets attacked, and you've seen that in the trailers, and it crashes, and there's nowhere else to go from there. You don't want to go bigger again, because then it starts to get exhausting like some of these blockbusters do. So World War Z wisely said, all right, let's switch gears. Let's go for a tighter, more compact ending. And I thought it worked really well. And I think that's why it might have connected with a larger audience. Now, zombies, of course, are doing really well. The Walking Dead's a big hit. You know, certain literary series are thriving in the zombie genre. But by setting up a sequel, by saying to yourselves, well, the story isn't really over at the end of World War Z, that we're just really starting this war against the undead, this could become the franchise. It could become a trilogy that Paramount already hoped that it was going to be going into it. And if you had said, you know, before World War Z comes out, that a sequel is almost inevitable, everyone would have laughed, because it was just going to be – it was going to cost too much money. It was never going to earn that money back, and everybody was going to just dismiss it. But now I think Paramount has a viable franchise on their hands, and I could say I look forward to the next chapter of this story.
I'm curious to see whether or not that's a lesson to Hollywood in the future. And, you know, and Damon Lindelof, he wrote that new ending. And he,
right.
You know, and this is a guy that a lot of people kind of, you know, chew at. You know, they kind of make fun of because of his scripts, but
right.
Damon Lindelof, if you read what he has to say in interviews, he's a really, really smart writer, and he really knows the story process. Mm-hmm. And he credited them with taking a chance on a smaller ending. And you know, in this day and age where Hollywood needs to go bigger and better, and every blockbuster has to end with a city being destroyed,
right.
I hope people, you know, pay attention to that ending of World War Z and say, you know what, we can play around and maybe do stuff like this, and audiences will appreciate that because it's different from everything else they're seeing. Let's leave it at that, Sean. We have to move on. The biggest summer story, I am going to say it has to be Batman vs. Superman movie.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that is a huge one.
I think that that story, you know, just announcing a Batman vs. Superman movie at Comic-Con was a big deal. I think that it's a movie that they've tried in the past. They've tried to kind of put the mechanics together. They've never been able to do. Now that they've set up this Man of Steel, Zack Snyder's Superman universe, they're going to bring Batman in. We're still, as of right now, we're still waiting to find out whether that Batman is going to be Christian Bale. There's rumors that say they're offering money or somebody new. There's rumors that say they're looking at somebody new. So no matter, you know, every day it's a different rumor. So until Warner Brothers officially says this is who's playing Batman, we're not going to know. But it's going to be really interesting to follow that movie and see how it progresses and see what they change about Superman, whether or not they take all of that criticism from the ending of Man of Steel, or whether they embrace that and
right.
say, no, this is what we're doing with this character. Me, personally, I hope they embrace it. I hope we see a flawed Superman in the second one, someone who's trying to redeem some of the actions and some of the harm that he caused at the end of Man of Steel. Your biggest summer story.
Well, when you said story, I thought you meant like trend. And so I singled out the reemergence of the coming of age story. We touched on it briefly with Spectacular Now, but we saw some great, great coming of age movies this year with The Way, Way Back, The Kings of Summer, and Spectacular Now. We've gushed about them on the podcast in the past. And so I'll just say, if you haven't seen any of those three, go find them all. They're all fantastic. I'm not saying that the John Hughes era is back upon us, but there are some smart screenwriters and directors who are working to bring that type of storytelling back to theaters, and I applaud them for it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's I think mainly it's because a lot of these people that are making these movies grew up with these same movies, and now they're able to make their own movies, and so of course they're inspired by the films they grew up with. I welcome it. I love coming of age movies. That genre is like my favorite genre.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can do a little bit of everything. It could hit these emotional spots in you. It hits nostalgic spots in you. It hits funny spots.
Yeah, they're funny.
Spots. Yeah, they're films that can really hit all of these different emotions inside of you while you're watching them, and those are my favorite kinds of films.
Yep.
Let's combine these last two, Biggest Star and Breakout Star.
Breakout Star, I'm going with Michael B. Jordan, who was the lead in Fruitvale Station. And again, this is going small, and it's a movie that's been around since Sundance and making some of the festival circuit rounds. But you're going to hear his name for a lot of other projects because he's an extremely talented kid. He's been talked about for the Fantastic Four, if they want to use him as the Human Torch. He carries this entire movie. I mean, the movie Fruitvale Station, essentially the last day in the life of this man, this young man, this African-American man, who we see him die in the opening credits. I mean, it's based on a true story. They show this newsreel footage. He gets shot by a cop in a San Francisco police station, and you just watch this guy carry out his day. Some of it's a little bit cliched, some of it's a little bit Hollywood, but it's always believable and credible in this young actor's hands. He's fantastic. I liked him in almost everything he's been in so far. He was in Chronicle. He's been in a couple of TV spots too. He's a great actor, and I think this is his foot is in the door officially. He's going to start becoming a household name, and I think he earned it. He's a tremendous, tremendous performer.
Yeah, they're also trying to make him the next Apollo Creed in a spin-off about Apollo's grandson, I think, and sort of coming of into a boxer like his grandfather. Your biggest star? Do you have a biggest star?
Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel is proven again. I don't think does anybody realize how big of a movie Fast and Furious 6 is? And maybe it's just Fast and Furious. Maybe they can just keep putting out movies, and maybe Riddick will come out and it won't do very well. But Vin Diesel has the fifth highest grossing movie of the year. It doesn't have Marvel or Pixar behind it. He just keeps putting out these sequels. He just landed a Marvel movie. He's going to be voicing Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, he's red hot right now, and he's been red hot for several years. And he's like the quietest, off the radar A-list superstar. He's not Brad Pitt. He's not Johnny Depp. He just keeps putting out movies that make a ton of money. And I think he's had a tremendous summer.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. Even Riddick, too. Whenever we write about Riddick, and here's a sequel that's coming out for Chronicles of Riddick. I mean, it's a film, you know, I guess it's on that Resident Evil level.
Right.
There's a lot of interest in it.
And
anything that Vin Diesel does, people are all over. And the guy really knows it. And he's been playing around on social media this summer. And
well, and for that reason, too. Like, he'll put a picture up on social media and it'll get, you know, a million likes. He has a huge following on that. And he knows how to use that tool to get new information about his products without having to go through the studios. It's kind of brilliant.
It is kind of brilliant. And you know what? It's hard for me. I was going to say Brad Pitt because I think Brad Pitt took World War Z. He put it on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. The guy literally went from city to city to city himself. This is Brad Pitt we're talking about,
right?
Promoting this film. And I feel like he single-handedly changed the opinion of that film going into it. Because of that, it's turned into, I think, his biggest box office grosser in the history of Brad Pitt.
Right, and he could have walked away. He could have just left it alone and let it open on its own.
He could have walked away and said, you know what, I'm chalking this up. We just didn't do it right. We didn't make it. But instead, he embraced it, put it on his shoulders, and went city to city. And this is one of the world's biggest movie stars. You don't see these kinds of guys going city to city like that on tour with a movie. He did that, and because of that, he single-handedly changed the way people viewed it. I'm saying Brad Pitt is summer's biggest star. Breakout star, I'm going. I have another combination.
Can I guess one of them?
You can guess one of them.
You're going to say Miles Teller.
I am not going to see Miles Teller. I am going to say Brie Larson.
Ooh, good choice.
Tremendous. This girl is tremendous in a movie called Short Term 12. Comes out in limited release this weekend. It's going to expand. The name of the movie is Short Term 12. Brie Larson. Check her out in it. I think that she just surprised the hell out of me when I saw this film earlier this year. It's one of my favorite films of the year so far.
It's great.
And she plays a counselor in a home for at-risk children. And she used to be a child that comes from really horrible upbringings. And so her kind of balancing both of those worlds is just tremendous. She does a tremendous job at it. Also, Rinko Kikuchi.
From Pacific Rim, which is also one of my favorite summer movies.
From Pacific Rim and The Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
Here is one of the only females that kicked some serious ass this summer. And she's a foreign actress in two huge blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I give her props. I give her props for getting herself into that position. And I give her props for kicking some butt and being one of the only females that did kick butt in Hollywood Fair this summer. So for that, I am saying, you know what? Rinko Kikuchi, let's give her some love.
Wow, we didn't give a lot of Marvel love on this podcast. I'm very surprised. And they had a very big summer. They're going to have a big fall. But this is our summer wrap-up. It's a lot of material. It's a lot of information. I think we recommended a lot of interesting films for you to check out if you haven't seen some of these off-the-radar things. We, you know, commended the blockbusters that tried, that went the extra effort and pushed and tried to get in front of the right audiences. And we slapped the wrists of some of the blockbuster directors who maybe lost their way through pre-production and production. And hopefully Hollywood can learn a few lessons from those mistakes.
We do. Overall, I enjoyed this summer. I had fun with a lot of these films. I think that was that's my term of the summer. I had fun. I had fun with Iron Man 3. I had fun with Star Trek Into Darkness. I had fun with Pacific Rim. I had fun with Man of Steel. But if I do ask Hollywood to do something in the future when it comes to summer blockbusters, it's let's trust some director visions. Let's trust some single visions on these movies. Let's not give them to 25 different people. Let's not try to make every blockbuster appeal to everyone, whether they're 4 years old or whether they're 40 years old. Let's take some more risks with these bigger movies. Let's have some fun. Let's try to do some different things. Let's think outside of the box. That's all I ask Hollywood to do moving forward. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me on this bombastic of a podcast episode where we talked all about the summer movie season. And next week, maybe we'll preview the fall season a little bit. What do you think?
That'd be a good idea because we have a lot of really good titles on the horizon. We can see things like Gravity and we can see things like Prisoners and some very exciting films that I think we might still be talking about as the award season ramps up.
I hear that. All right, Sean O'Connell, thank you very much. And to you out there, thank you for listening to our podcast. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. You'll see the little buttons in the post there. And please feel free to comment below and tell us what you think and whether you like the show or whether you'd like us to say and talk about different things. And of course, if you're buying movie tickets to go to the movies this weekend, please do so on Fandango. Thank you very much and enjoy your weekend at the movies.